Good afternoon. From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for tuning in. Divers are searching the murky waters of Gastineau Channel this week in the hopes of locating the body of a Juneau man who's been missing for nearly a year. Benjamin Benny Stepitin, a 42-year-old Juneau resident, disappeared last June. His brother, Martin Stepitin Sr., says the family hasn't given up on him. This is the second underwater search for his body.
We just want to find our brother, you know, and we really miss our brother. And if we could get some closure to finding him, then that would be amazing.
Benjamin is Alaska native, about 5 feet, 6 inches tall, and has brown eyes. Before he went missing, he'd been homeless for roughly 2 years and often spent time in the downtown area. Since his disappearance almost a year ago, his friends and family have been searching for him. In September of last year, his family raised over $25,000 to fund an initial private dive team. This time around, the Juneau Police Department is paying. The family worked with the Juneau Police to lobby the nonprofit Alaska Dive Search Rescue and Recovery to come to Juneau to search for Benjamin. The underwater search began on Monday and will last through the weekend. Martin says he's grateful the divers are finally here after months of advocacy, and he hopes to see these resources become more readily available in the future.
It means everything, you know. You can't put a number or a price on what they're doing, and I think that anybody would do anything to try to find their family members, you know, and that's exactly what we're trying to do right now.
The search includes both divers and underwater vehicles with sonar technology. The team is scanning up and down the downtown seawalk while thousands of cruise ship visitors walk above them. Martin says that his family believes their brother may have fallen or been pushed into the water along the seawalk. Juneau Police is currently investigating the case as a criminal investigation. Deputy Chief Craig Campbell says police believe there may have been people involved in Benjamin's disappearance who are withholding information. People can share information by calling JPD's dispatch line at 907-586-0600 or submitting an anonymous tip through Juneau Crime Line. The case against a former Juneau chiropractor who's been accused of assaulting more than a dozen women under the guise of medical care may continue into another year. At a hearing this week, the defense attorney said he would likely not be ready to go to trial until 2027. Jeffrey Foltz went on trial last year, more than 4 years after he was arrested for alleged assault while he was employed at Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. The alleged abuse happened from 2014 to 2020. The trial lasted 6 weeks and ended in 2 counts not guilty and a deadlocked jury on a dozen other counts. The judge in this case later dismissed one more charge. And that means 11 counts of assault remain, which Foltz can be tried for again. But the court hasn't scheduled a new trial yet. The court assigned Foltz a public defender in October, Juneau's Nico Ambrose. Ambrose said in court Wednesday that the last 7 months haven't been enough time to prepare for trial. Stacking his table in the courtroom with binders and boxes of paper, he said he likely won't be ready until 2027.
It's hard to kind of envision what I'm talking about if I'm just saying it, but I brought over all of this material to kind of show this is what I mean. This is not everything.
Prosecutor Kristen Tendy argued that the state has to do the same amount of work as the defense. She says she came into the case shortly before the first trial and is still urging to set a trial date. Here's Tendy, who participated in the hearing remotely.
And the defendant is entitled to representation. He is entitled to competent representation. And he is not entitled to the absolute perfect epitome of the greatest attorney that ever existed. He is entitled to the same representation that every other defendant is entitled to.
Tendy asked for a trial date to be set.
The state will be ready. This cannot keep going. At this point, Your Honor needs to set a trial date. We need to move forward.
Ambrose said his preparations are intended to meet the ethical standards to represent Foltz to the best of his ability.
Making reasonable requests for time to go through things, file motion practice, hire experts, and litigate a case is not perfect lawyering. It's what lawyers have to do to further their ethical obligations of zealous advocacy and effective representation.
Ambrose asked to meet next in October. Judge Larry Wolford weighed the two sides' opposing requests. He referenced an Alaska Supreme Court ruling that placed limits on further delays in cases from before 2022, like this one. According to the ruling, courts had a limited time to extend cases unless, quote, extraordinary circumstances exist and that delay is indispensable to the interest of justice.
I think I have said several times in the past that in some ways this case is its own extraordinary circumstance.
Wolford pointed to the amount of evidence in the case.
It is a difficult balance to strike. But as I said, I'm not willing to kick this down the road until October.
Instead, the judge chose a compromise and set the next hearing for July. It's scheduled for July 15th at the Diamond Courthouse in Juneau. And aside from timing, another issue is still outstanding. At a hearing in April, Ambrose said he was considering filing a motion to change the venue of the retrial from Juneau to Anchorage. He has not filed that motion, but said Wednesday he's still planning to. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cormery. And the Alaska legislature, in a historic vote, rejected Governor Mike Dunleavy's pick for Attorney General, Stephen Cox, yesterday. The 29-31 vote is only the second time in state history the Alaska legislature has rejected a cabinet-level appointee by the governor, and the first since the Palin administration. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, Cox's tendency to defer to the Trump administration and his willingness to wade into culture war issues ultimately doomed his nomination.
Amicus briefs, sometimes also called friend of the court briefs, give interested parties a chance to weigh in on a case, even when they're not directly involved. In Cox's roughly 9 months in office, Alaska signed on to more than 100 of them. That's about one every 2 days.
Alaska's attorney general has enormous discretion. They choose the cases and they put the credibility of the state on the line.
That's Senator Lukey Tobin, an Anchorage Democrat. She said Cox had not given lawmakers enough reason to trust that he'd use that discretion wisely.
We deserve an attorney general who is focused on our public safety, on consumer protection, on missing and murdered indigenous peoples, on racial justice, on rural protections, and on defending our constitutional rights, not ideological national legal battles.
She pointed in particular to a brief in a Supreme Court case challenging birthright citizenship. That brief, signed by 25 state attorneys general, argues in support of the Trump administration's position that the simple fact that a child is born in the United States is not enough to establish them as a citizen. Nearly every Democrat and independent in the legislature voted to reject Cox. Republicans aligned with the House and Senate's bipartisan majority caucuses were split. One of them, Senate President Gary Stevens, a Republican from Kodiak, said Cox's brief opposing birthright citizenship was reason enough to vote him down.
I just think it's the wrong-headed approach to our Constitution. The Constitution makes it very clear that if you're born here, you are a citizen.
Now, it wasn't all about amicus briefs. During confirmation hearings, lawmakers also questioned Cox's approach to other conflicts with the Trump administration, like the Division of Elections' decision to turn over confidential voter data to the Justice Department, despite the Alaska Constitution's right to privacy. Cox defended himself to lawmakers, saying he'd followed a state law that allows voter data to be turned over to another government for legitimate purposes. And he said most of the amicus briefs he'd signed were written by other states, and he didn't have an opportunity to edit them. Minority Republicans in the House and Senate defended him on the floor. All but one voted to confirm him. Representative Kevin McCabe, a Big Lake Republican, said he thought Cox was simply carrying out the governor's priorities.
I suspect that a lot of what we are talking about here is not some rogue attorney general off on his own. I think that he's had direction. Direction's been provided to him. He's doing a certain number of things that his boss is telling him to do.
Other Republicans commended his character, saying they'd been impressed with him in one-on-one interviews. Representative Julie Colomb, an Anchorage Republican, said she was grateful for a joint effort between the state and the municipality of Anchorage targeting retail theft, public disorder, and drug use.
We've had a public safety problem for quite some time. A.G. Cox was vital to making that connection between the governor and the resources from the Department of Law to come help our city. And I really, really appreciate that. From him. We haven't seen that before.
The governor's office announced shortly after the vote that Department of Law attorney Corey Mills would take over as acting attorney general. But the story's not over for Cox. Dunleavy announced he'd appointed him to a new position, counsel to the governor, basically a legal advisor. After rejecting Cox, legislators approved four other Dunleavy-appointed department heads in unanimous or near-unanimous votes. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And a health clinic in Sitka closed midday on Thursday after a possible measles exposure. In a post on social media shortly after 2 p.m., the Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, or SEARCH, announced that the Sitka Medical Center would be closed for the remainder of the day, quote, out of an abundance of caution due to a potential measles exposure. It said they were contacting patients directly to reschedule appointments and that they would provide additional updates as more information becomes available. KCAW reached out to SEARCH and the Alaska Department of Epidemiology for more information on the potential exposure, but had not received a response by press time. As of yesterday, SEARCH planned to reopen the clinic today. And a Superior Court judge is allowing the Anchorage School District to resume the process of closing Campbell STEM Elementary School. The Anchorage School Board's February 24th decision to close the school was to help address the school district's roughly $90 million budget deficit. The Campbell STEM Education and Preservation Fund sued, claiming the district and board acted arbitrarily in moving to close Campbell STEM by not considering private grant funding in the board's decision. Judge Una Gondabir granted the group's request for a preliminary injunction on May 1st that temporarily paused the district's efforts to close the school. Part of the order required school district officials to hold public meetings to discuss the grant funding. In an order on Monday, Gondabir said attorneys for the school district and school board provided a notice showing that the district held a meeting last week to discuss the grant funding with board members. Gondabir said the school district had complied with her original order and she dissolved the injunction. In an email, a school district spokesperson said the district is pleased with the judge's ruling and officials are moving forward with the closure of Campbell STEM. Kevin Fitzgerald, an attorney representing the Campbell STEM advocacy group, said on Monday that he was still reviewing the judge's ruling. He said the group plans to continue to fight the school closure. And spending in Alaska's U.S. Senate race is ramping up. The Democratic Senate Majority PAC says it's reserving $10 million of Alaska TV time to air political ads. The group said by email that it will support Democrat Mary Peltola against Republican incumbent Senator Dan Sullivan. The announcement also suggested a possible theme would be rising costs and Sullivan's loyalty to President Trump. Reserving TV time is not a binding commitment, but the group's announcement signals national Democrats believe they should invest in the Alaska race and that they think Sullivan might be vulnerable. Campaign finance laws allow super PACs like Senate Majority PAC to raise and spend unlimited funds, but they aren't allowed to coordinate with a candidate's campaign. Typically, super PACs and other non-candidate campaigns air some of the harsher attack ads, leaving candidates themselves free to run ads that project a positive image. The Democratic House Majority PAC announced last month that it plans to spend $2.4 million on ads in Alaska. Meanwhile, the Republican National Committee says it's investing in the ground game ahead of November's midterm elections. The party says it's already deployed staffers to take Trump's message directly to Alaska voters. A spokesman for the RNC wouldn't disclose how many people it has sent to Alaska, but it said more are on the way. And it's 56 degrees and fairly sunny this afternoon. Tomorrow, it looks like we have about a 10% chance of rain with a high of 53 degrees. Sunday, it looks like the rain may pick up. You're listening to KTOO.